30 seconds, reality as you know it will cease to exist. In its place, you will find a new dimension, identical to the one you've left behind, only slightly better. Take a deep breath and open your mind to the magic within you. This is no ordinary podcast. This podcast is a ritual.
Last year for my birthday, my friend Alana got me a wizard puppet. It's a little purple thing with stringy white hair and a star-spangled hat. And at first, I was just delighted because I love getting wizardly gifts. And it went in my closet and I figured, I don't know, I'll use this when I'm around children or something like that. But as the year went on and I reached a point where I was struggling with some of my personal development, I became really frustrated with the changes that I could create for my clients, but struggled to do for myself. And then it struck me. I realized there was the old therapeutic cliche of, do you want to talk to the puppet? And in a fit of desperation, I said, you know what? I do want to talk to the puppet. Let me see if I can grab that wizard puppet and give voice to my own inner wizard. And I did. And it was pretty amazing. I mean, obviously, first and foremost, it felt extremely silly. I was very embarrassed and self-conscious that somehow someone would hear me doing this ridiculous thing, even though I was alone in my own home. I mean, there's something about a man who's approaching 40 talking to a wizard puppet that feels a little bit out there. And I say this as a man who's approaching 40 and walks around in wizard robes. So no matter how far you think you've gone outside the norm, there's always the possibility of being a little bit embarrassed. But what I found in talking to this wizard puppet was it let me play devil's advocate in a different way. Instead of just going round and around with my ruminating thoughts, struggling to find any sort of clarity, or just ranting into a journal entry, having the wizard puppet let me embody a different voice, a voice that was more thoughtful, more reasonable, more therapeutic, but also wasn't trying to argue with me. It wasn't coming in guns blazing saying, calm down, think about this rationally, you're being a jerk. It said, how do you feel about this? Where do you feel that in your body? What's going on? How might you respond differently? And in doing that, it let me continue to be a jerk for a little bit longer, continue to be kind of pouty, sullen, that little regressed boy, and get that out of my system in a way that I haven't been able to do when I'm trying to just 1, 2, 3, jump to a better mood, jump to a more mature, responsible place. And so the silliness of having this puppet enabled me to have an inner conversation that I found transformative. And so in today's episode of Talk to the Wizard with the Chilean musician La Calor, we're going to be exploring something similar but different. As we get into the conversation, learning more about La Calor, his struggles with alcohol, the reasons behind that, and how he's now feeling about his creative process, we're going to get in touch with some of the characters that live within him, the different voices that we can actually start to listen to, rather than just letting them boss us around, especially with that creative drive. That's one that we always think is good and pure, and we never realize when it crosses the line to becoming tyrannical and overbearing. But by listening to them and giving voice to them, we're able to negotiate a truce in a different way, one that's not based on lopsided repression, but more equality, communication, and collaboration. And so this is the idea that I want you to take with you as you listen to this conversation. That question about what are your inner voices that you could explore more? Whether you use a puppet or not, I think it's important to talk to the wizard within. But of course, that can be tricky. So if you want to talk to the wizard without, we are now taking applications once again to come on this podcast, have a conversation with me, and dive into some fun wiznotherapy. So if you're interested, visit personisawake.com/talktothewizard, where you can submit a form with some more information about what you're going through, what you'd like to talk to the wizard about, and we'll try and get you on to the best of our ability. And also, I'd like to invite you all to stay tuned to the very end of this episode, where we're going to hear an exciting track from La Calore, so you'll get a little bit of what all this conversation is about and what this creative experience, this inner critic, is trying to bring to the surface. And so that's enough of me, the wizard, talking. So let's listen to La Calore talk to the wizard. Hey, La Calore.
Hey.
Guess what? You're talking to the wizard.
That's awesome. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm great. It's something crazy because I just arrived from a funeral.
Okay.
But this last year, I believe my relationship with life and death has been transformed in something very interesting. Full of love.
Yeah. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, I was always scared from death since I was a little child. I believe that it is one of my first memories, knowing that I was going to die.
Yeah.
Thinking about the planet as a globe, thinking in my case that there was no one taking care of us in the space, in the sky. And I was pretty scared. I started asking everyone, all the adults I was seeing, if what was going to happen to me, to my parents, and everything was dark. Mm-hmm. And since then, I was pretty scared until last year when I knew that death was another path, something in the air, something... I don't know if I can describe it well, but when I think of it, I feel love. And that is the first time that happened to me.
How did you come to this transition in your thinking or feeling?
Well, I was having problems with alcohol last year. Since the pandemic, I was drinking a lot. I believe I started drinking like 12 p.m. I believe it wasn't alcoholism because once I left it behind, I didn't want it to drink anymore. I didn't miss it. So that made me think that it wasn't like the disease. But I was drinking a lot. Last year, I was forgetting about myself. And I was with my wife in a wedding. And I was crying a lot. I had like three episodes last year when I started to cry and I knew I was going to die soon. And I was scared that I couldn't take care of her, of my dog and my cats. That's my closest family right now. And I was going to miss everyone. My friends, my family, my parents, my sisters. And when she grabbed my face and said, "Hey, I'm here. Everything's fine." I thought, where was I? Where was I all this time? Thinking that alcohol was making me someone happy.
Yeah.
And also thinking that my job and the things I was creating in the last 30 years were something that should have been something really important, you know?
Yeah. So what I understand you saying is, so during the pandemic, which I hear from a lot of people, I get with my hypnotherapy practice, a lot of calls where people are like, my drinking kind of crept up during the pandemic and then didn't really creep back down. And I'm looking for some help with that. And I think, you know, it's really good in some ways that we've acknowledged that alcoholism is a very serious condition and some people are extremely affected by it in a way that I think the disease metaphor makes sense. But I think just with what you shared about that, we forget how socially connected we are and how context dependent it is. You know, you cut a bunch of people off from their normal routines and suddenly the things that socially regulated that drinking and allowed it to be at a healthy, acceptable level are absent, and that drinking gets out of bounds, which, you know, it wasn't like there was a pandemic of viral alcoholism. It was just that we're social creatures, and it kind of flies in the face of a lot of the individualism that we hear about with mental health, that really we're actually much more connected in that way. And so I think, as I hear you saying it, your world was sort of destabilized. You were drinking much more regularly, and this fear of death was coming up in these kind of crisis moments where suddenly it seemed very hopeless, and you're worried about the people that you care about, the creatures that you care about. And when you had this moment where your wife was able to just reassure you, it kind of broke through and brought you back to a more stable sense of self that was then confused about who was this dissociated self a moment ago that was freaking out. Am I getting this correctly?
Exactly.
Yeah. So what happened after that moment when you kind of had that breakthrough and she really was able to cut through and connect with you?
In that precise moment, well, I was like in a blank state.
Mm.
We arrived home. I fall asleep. And at the next day, my wife wasn't there. I don't remember where was she. I believe she was working. Yeah, she was working. And I was alone all day.
Yeah.
And I remembered that I didn't want to be that guy again.
Mm-hmm.
That drunk being.
Yeah.
All the following year, I thought that I could make a better person of myself if I was working a lot and creating a lot with music. I started a podcast. I did a lot of things, a lot of projects, but I started being drunk of projects also.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a new crisis in December or January. And I started with therapy. I never did therapy before because I believe I was scared of hearing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredible because it is one of the things I most love right now to do. Because yesterday, my therapist asked me, like, what do you think about all these things? How do you finish this session? And I told her, like, I know you helped me a lot, but it is incredible to see that all the answers are inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And all this drunk of creations, all of this drunk of alcohol being is something that it's like protecting me of hearing myself, knowing myself and having these answers in my hands.
Yeah. I think you've touched on a really fascinating paradox that I kind of want to, you know, explore a little bit. But before I do, I just want to comment that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous talks about like your moment of clarity. Like, you know, you've hit rock bottom and suddenly you're going, oh my God, I just drove blackout drunk with my 4-year-old in the car seat. Like, what am I doing? Like, and you have this kind of moment of realization and that creates change. And what I see in my hypnotherapy practice is I'll say first and foremost, I've experienced this myself. There's some times where you're like, oh, I want to start exercising more and you fail and you don't do it and you flake and you procrastinate and it just doesn't happen. And then there's that time where you come back vacation, you're like, I'm ready to get serious about exercise, and you just freaking do. And it just suddenly is happening and you're like, what shifted? What changed? And obviously in those moments where it comes together and it clicks, that's great. It's fun being able to just make a radical change and feel very empowered. But those other moments where it's not clicking, it's not changing, are very frustrating for people. And I think that's one of the main things that hypnosis does, is recognize that sometimes your conscious self and your unconscious self click into alignment and both are like, hey, let's quit drinking. And it's like, cool. And then there's no struggle there. It's not like, oh, I really want to drink. Oh, I keep backsliding. I keep relapsing. It's like, I'm just done with it, because I'm fully aligned. But then there's other times where consciously we're going, alcohol's ruining my life. I need to make a change. I want to stop hurting the people close to me. But unconsciously, we have reasons that we don't understand. And so that's where that struggle takes place, where it feels like I'm trying to make this change, but I can't. And I think what most people end up doing, and I've certainly done plenty, is we just beat ourselves up. We think that that part that's doing the negative habit or not doing the good habit is bad, that we're a failure, and we just get really frustrated with ourselves. Whereas I think what therapy can often let us do is just get curious of, oh, okay, like, you know, let's imagine that you and four friends are trying to figure out where to get food. If everybody is like, you know, we want pizza, and one person's like, I want Chinese, and the other person's like, I want tacos. Okay, we can't decide where to go to a restaurant yet. We got to talk to those other people, see why they want what they want, and see how we can come to agreement. And so it's amazing when it happens spontaneously, but when we're struggling with it, I think learning to get curious and recognize that we're getting drunk for a reason. It's not an accident. We're doing something. And that's the paradox that I wanted to bring up that you touched on, where I think often we think, oh, I'm getting drunk to cover something up. But it sounds like in your case, the alcohol was what let those feelings that you'd had inside you, this deep fear of death, finally start to come up and out, right? Like those were the moments where you were able to really like shed tears and express, I'm carrying around this deep worry that goes back to childhood about what happens after we die and how are my loved ones going to be cared for? And then on the other hand, I think we often think about doing work, especially creative work, especially for our generation, especially in this day and age, why that's the best thing that you could ever do. That's in fact your whole purpose as a human being is to do creative work and then be financially successful at it. That's the dream. You can do what you quote unquote love, make your creative work, scale it, make a bunch of money, become a superstar, blow up on TikTok. That's what we're supposed to be doing. But even though that's this idea that I'm getting out something from my true self, that idea of work can be used to cover up what we're actually feeling. So what I heard and what you just shared was that there is this kind of unsettling that occurs with COVID, your schedule being disrupted. There's these feelings and these fears that come out and you're able to have that moment where you express that fear and your partner is able to look you in the eyes and assuage that fear. To reassure you and reassure you in a way that maybe other times had kind of pinged off defenses, but this time cut right through down to that unconscious. And that unconscious woke up the next day and is like, cool, mission accomplished. We expressed our fear. We don't want to let that run us around anymore. And we don't want to be that drunk person. That's not what we want to do. But then it's interesting to hear you say that you switched into kind of workaholism and constant busyness, because I think that's another way to keep down those fears and kind of paper them over. So I'm curious now if you've figured out what the fears that were kind of lingering or what was going on with the workaholism. What have you learned about that?
I believe that there's a transcendence on it. I believe that I thought that work could make me immortal in some way. My creations could be immortal. And maybe it was a way...
Mortal or immortal?
Immortal.
Immortal. Got it. Okay.
And I thought though all those things I were doing could make me live longer and avoid this death issue.
Yeah.
That's one reason. But there are some realistic ones, like more landed ones that are being perfectionist, being a perfectionist. I'm looking up for making always not the best of me, but the best. So I'm always working for making something that is awesome. And right now I'm trying to figure out if it is something that I'm wanting to hear, that people say to me that is awesome. But once I get there and people congratulate me because of something, because of my work, because of a creation, I don't feel that I'm accomplishing something because I know that moment that I'm doing it for me also.
Okay.
I'm doing it for love. Every time I'm on stage, I love the crowd. Yeah. And I think there's a connection, a very strong connection. But I know that there's love in that. But there's like another Miguel, that another La Calor, that it's telling me you have to do this perfect.
Yeah.
You know,
so let me make sure I understand. Is the feeling like, you know, if you have a performance, let's say, and people come up and say, oh my gosh, that was amazing. Is it like you want to deflect that and not receive that appreciation? Or is it something else?
No, I believe that it is good to receive it. But I thought that my perfectionism was because I wanted to hear that. But I believe that my perfectionism is maybe a way to avoid these deep fears inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like taking another road to be immortal in that way.
Yeah, it reminded me, you know, of all of the pharaohs and kings and people of history who killed a lot of slaves to build their monument because they're like, I'm mortal, I'm going to die, but I don't want to because I'm the all-powerful god king. So I'm going to create this giant pile of rocks and that'll be immortal. That's how I'll live on in this externalized fashion. And I wonder if this will resonate for you, but I wonder if sometimes when we have that perfectionist tendency, if there's a feeling of shame or not good enoughness that we perceive in ourselves, like, I'm not good enough, so I'll make this external project good enough, right? I'm going to die, so I'm going to make something that won't die. I'm imperfect, so I'm going to make something that's perfect. Like, flawed, failing, frail, mortal inside of me, but externally, that's where I can have control and create this perfect thing. But then it's one of those loops where maybe it's never able to be satisfied. You know, that's why the pyramids get bigger and bigger, because guess what? Pyramids don't actually give you immortality. And, you know, guess what? You can make the most amazing masterpiece album in the world and have people come up to you and go, this record changed my life. And then walk away and go, oh yeah, but I still feel like a piece of shit. Like I've had that experience on like both sides. Like I've talked to artists where I'm like, oh my God, your record changed my life. And they're like, oh, that early one? Oh, I think it's so bad. I don't like that one. And I'm like, what? How? And then on the other hand, you know, I've had people be like, you know, send me a really nice email, which I really appreciate. But then I'm going through my regular human struggles that day. And it's kind of like, I'm feeling really down on myself. Oh, wow, this listener said this podcast changed their life. That's cool. 2 minutes later, And, you know, I think it's these loops, right, that don't always close and resolve, but we're fixated on the thing that we think. It's like, oh, if this album didn't solve that, next album will. Next performance, that's when I'll feel all okay.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I think that there's a constant sentiment of failure about me and, as you say, and as I have been resonating with the podcast, well, right now I'm going to tell you that your podcast changed my life. And you will say, okay, but boomy.
Yeah.
No, but I feel a constant failure of myself, and I'm trying to make the most wonderful piece of song that I have ever made. And if it's not this one, and it's very interesting, because once I'm doing it, I'm not feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, it won't be this one. It's going to be the next one. And when I publish this song, everyone tells me, it is so great and it's so simple at the same time. And when I was recording it, I didn't feel that.
Mm.
It was like something, I felt that I have to sing that in that moment, but nothing else.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're touching on a really complex part of creativity. Like, we view the things that we're generating so differently than we view things that are externally generated. I mean, you know, maybe if you're a very nitpicky musician or something was recorded really poorly, you're going to listen and be like, oh, those drums sound a little bit tinny, or like, I don't like this or that. But most of the time you're like, oh, cool, it's a record, and you just listen to it, right? Like, but then yours, you're like, I do the same thing with writing. It's very like, someone has to be a pretty poor writer for me to be reading like a published book and be like, here's how I'd rewrite that sentence, because I'm just lost in the flow of it. I'm like following the ideas. But even my writing that I've like polished multiple times, and then I'm going back to later, so I've let it rest for a while, I'm still going through and I'm like, I could cut that adverb. I could move that around. I don't know if that should be a semicolon. Like, I think there's something about when it comes out of us, when it's our baby, that lends itself to the hypercritical and that push. And I think, you know, you hear great artists talk about this too. Like, I think there's a restlessness. That's why great artists keep making new albums and keep pushing into new territory if they're truly great. But they might be leaving, you know, 10 classic albums in their wake and be like, ah, I'm still not there. It's still not right. So how is this? You seem like you've been through kind of two crises related to alcoholism and then workaholism. And where do you feel like you're situated right now? And what is a goal for this session of what you'd kind of like us to dive into and work on?
Well, right now, I feel pretty great. I was...
Then our work here is done. Good job.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that was easy. Well,
Well, I believe I'm in the road. I'm still in the road because at the beginning of this year, after I realized that I was in this workaholism, mm-hmm. I knew that I had to change something big. So I realized that it was going to be a long road. There were going to happen a lot of things. Maybe I wanted to drink alcohol again. Mm. Maybe I was going to feel alone. Mm. Right now,
you mean feel alone in your sobriety?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Because as you said at the beginning, we live in a society that it's based in alcohol. I remember mm-hmm. that once I was about to be 18 years old, yeah. Everyone was telling me, "Oh, okay, you will drink something with me right now." Mm-hmm. All the adults. So
yeah.
And right now, I believe I'm in a stage in a week that I'm discovering other things. Mm-hmm. Like my family, my close family, my wife, the love, the real love, you know? 4 or 5 years ago, I met an astrologist.
Okay.
And he, it was like a YouTube congress. And yeah. There was this guy that he had a YouTube channel, and he was making a lot of things in his channel, and he was doing tarot, and he was making some videos of astrology, and he took me by the arm and told me, "Hey, you're going to be pretty successful, man." I wasn't speaking with him. Was like, we crossed roads and he took me by the arm and he told me, "Hey, you're going to be pretty successful, man. But if you want that, you have to leave your family behind."
Ooh.
And I said, "What?" And since he appeared from nowhere, I thought, this is something. Someone is trying to tell me something. I usually think that all those signs are like, I have to hear those signs.
Yeah.
So I started, not only because of that, because of other signs too, I started working a lot and looking up for this perfectionism and this, I said, I'm going to be like one of the biggest musicians in the world. I'm going to be a headliner of Lollapalooza and I'm going to make that all the stages are full of crowd and a lot of things. So, and I believe that could come up again. So that's one of my fears right now. My fears are being transformed in the first place, not being dead. And in the second place right now is like not being that guy that was killing me.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating what you just said about this guy came out of nowhere. So I took what he said really seriously, which I think is something that like we do in magic because we're conditioned by movies that it's the like synchronistic random encounter that you're not expecting that like holds the most weight. But if we thought about it from a different perspective, it'd be like, you know, if a very close friend, if your wife, if somebody who knows you really well was like, "I have this prediction," they've got a lot more information. Like they know you, like they understand your life in context and what drives you. That should mean more. But instead, some random guy with a YouTube channel comes up and it's like, "Oh my God, it must be the thing." And I think it's interesting too, because we were just talking a moment ago about critical reception from, you know, fans and other people who actually know your work. And it's like, those people come up and they're like, "This show was great. You did awesome. I've seen you perform multiple times. This is the best time you performed. I'm a knowledgeable person on this. And you're like, no. And then somebody else is like, I don't know you, but this thing. And you're like, whoa. And I think that's part of, you know, I've said it kind of jokingly. I don't want to like seem like I'm picking on you, because I think we all are conditioned for this, that there's so much good advice right in that nucleus that's closest to us. But we're like, no, I'm going to ignore that. I'm not going to listen to this friend. I'm going to ask a friend for advice, but then I'm going to ignore everything they say. I'm going to like hear my partner give me something really helpful, and I'm just going to completely ignore it and forget about it. But then we're like, we're all seeking, right? And so we're all seeking the literal wizard, like, oh, this magical person is going to have access to arcane, otherworldly information that will be more legit than what's literally right in front of me all the time.
There's something crazy on that also, Devin, because sometimes I believe that my mind, my creative mind, is pretty twisted. Mm-hmm. And I have my friends, I love my friends, but they are pretty different from me. So
yeah. They
could have their own twisted thoughts mm-hmm. about their own creations, but they are living a little bit more regular life.
Mm-hmm.
With a regular job that I respect. I don't think that that's bad or wrong. But sometimes before asking them something, I say, nah, but these feelings, these thinkings are bad. No, they're not bad. They are crazy. So they are going to tell me, hey, man, come back to the earth and make money.
Right.
You know? So maybe that synchronicity of this anonymous dude that tells me that everything has to change in my life makes me also, oh, he's crazy as me.
Mm.
So sometimes I believe that, just as you say, some random things are more meaningful to me are also because some thoughts, I think they're crazy as those guys.
Yeah. Do you think that that astrologer told you what you wanted to hear? Like that was something that you believed in some way or were hoping was true for you? And so when he said that, it connected with that part of yourself?
Yeah, I think that's the reason. In that time, I wasn't married, and I was having a lot of trouble with my family, like my sisters. And
mm-hmm.
so I was not being in the same page as them.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to leave them behind.
Yeah.
So
it's permission. Like,
yeah. Oh,
if I just think I'm going to prioritize my music career and abandon my family, that doesn't sound great to admit to yourself. If somebody else says you can be very successful if you prioritize your music career and abandon your family, you're like, ah, it's the destiny of the stars. Like, who am I to ignore that? I got to go. Sorry, not my fault. This random astrologer told me. But I want to come back to what you said about friends, because again, you know, all of this stuff, like, this is why I think, you know, nothing boils down to an Instagram graphic, because everything goes both ways. The reason therapy can be so helpful is because somebody isn't truly objective, but they're more objective. You know, if you ask your friend, what do I do about my relationship? And your friend's like, I think your partner is annoying. They're going to give you advice that's not neutral, right? Like they're kind of like, ah, it'd be great if you like were single again, because I'm single and I want to like drink beer and hang out more and I don't like your girlfriend. So not neutral advice. Whereas a therapist can get a lot more into like, how do you feel about that? And I think sometimes I'm gonna paint with a broad brush here, but I think that can be a difference between maybe therapy and some of the more new agey things. Is therapy is trying to help somebody figure out what they feel. Like, what are those feelings? Even the scary, ugly ones. Like, how do we get in touch with those? And I think not in all forms, but in some forms, New Age stuff tells people what they want to hear. That's why so many of the New Age, you know, if you go look at New Age coach websites, you're going to see a lot of the same things about like, do you want to shed fear? Yeah. Do you want to be financially free and make a ton of money? Yeah. Do you want to find your soulmate? Yeah. Well, I've got great news for you, because you are. Oh my God, me? Great. And that's, you know, it resonates and makes a great sales pitch. But I think that's because that's what so many of us carry around in us. Those are our secret, not so secret desires. And so there's an entire art that's called cold reading, where that's how a lot of psychics operate, where they will make these generalities, and generalities that are aspirational are great. So you can kind of have a blend of like, do you sometimes feel alone? Oh my God, me, I feel so seen. Guess what? Everyone kind of feels alone sometimes. Like, you know, do you think that there's greatness in you that's waiting to get out? Oh my God, me. Yeah, everyone kind of feels that way. And so again, like, I'm not trying to just trash talk this astrologer, but I think this is the balance that we all have of how is one part of us struggling with our, you know, feelings that we're ashamed of, that we're afraid of, and we need someone to help us dig into those and look at those honestly and not just ignore them and push them away. And then we also have dreams of grandeur and great success, which should be nurtured to some extent, but can easily be preyed upon by somebody else and hyperinflated. So then suddenly we're like, I'm not going to look at any of my fears. I'm just a rocket ship to the moon. But I think that gets us back to what you were describing of that rocket ship to the moon is like, I've got to work. My next album's going to be perfect. I got to go, go, go. But I'm never addressing my fears. So it's like, I'm trying to fill a bucket that's got a hole in it. And I'm just filling it more and more and more and trying to just put more in there. And I'm watching it drain and drain and drain. And it's like, we need to do both. Like, we need to like patch our bucket so it can actually hold what we want to put into it and then put stuff into it. We don't want an empty bucket, but we also don't want a bucket that's perpetually leaking. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what the fuck's up with your bucket, dude?
Oh my God. I'm trying to figure it out. What's up with the bucket? Well, also you asked me before, what do I want to resolve here in the podcast? And as we talk about this random dude that appeared and told me that.
Don't listen to random astrologers on the street. Only listen to wizards you parasocially know through their podcasts. Like, we got to be very clear about our criteria here.
Exactly. Well, I had a crossroad with your podcast also. And when I started to hear it, and I told you, I sent you an email. I don't remember if it was an email before or an Instagram DM. And I sent you my music.
Say it again for the listeners and for the wizards with bad memories.
Okay. I discovered your podcast last year. And I believe I heard 3 episodes in a row. And I said, Devin is talking to me. Mm. I sent you a DM on Instagram, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I also sent you my music. Mm-hmm. And I told you, hey, Devin, I'm a musician. I believe every time I'm on stage, I'm performing. I'm making not only music, I'm also making magic.
Yeah.
So I believe that we're on a pretty same page. And mm-hmm. I would love to participate in the anniversary you were doing, the celebration mm-hmm. of Talking to the Wizard.
Yeah.
And I told you if I could participate. So I said, I need to talk to Devin. I need to meet him. Everything resonates with me. And I'm living something pretty dark right now. Mm-hmm. And I believe that speaking with him, I can have this therapy with you, this wisdom therapy with you, mm-hmm. where not only you could give me answers, but you could understand these twisted thoughts I was having.
Yeah.
And also you could tell me, well, this is life again, and we're going to die someday. And I was hoping that to hear that where's creativity in this?
Yeah.
Where we can find it, you know? So with all those other issues about alcohol and workaholism that I told you, I thought, well, maybe I could have the help of a wizard in this case.
Well, I've got bad news for you. We're not going to die. We're going to transcend to another realm that's a lot more work and a lot more stress than this one. So enjoy this life while you can, because it just goes on and on and on until you create infinite self-awareness and realize that you have to manage all of creation all at once. And that's a tremendous burden. So that's why you, as God, are constantly trying to reincarnate into smaller beings to forget about that immense burden that is being infinite and all-knowing. But we'll just forget about that and just be individual beings for the rest of this conversation. But I wanted to say that I think, you know, this podcast is magic. It's magic for me. It's magic for all of the listeners. And one thing about magic that I've learned through many impatient moments and frustrating moments is it has its own timeline. There's plenty of times where you do a ritual and you're waiting for like 3 weeks, like an Amazon package to arrive. And then you're like, oh, it didn't work. And then it's 6 months later and you're like, oh my God, it totally worked. It just worked way later, or like in this different way than I was expecting. Like, how cool. So I'm glad that we were able to kind of manifest this in the correct timeline of when it was right for us to talk and meet. But I hear you kind of dancing around. You've been through a few of these crises. It seems like the alcoholism resolved itself more cleanly, although now you're in that state where you're like, oh, but I kind of miss being able to like drink socially responsibly. Do I want to like wade back in? And then the workaholism seems a little bit less resolved. Would you say that's right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's do some wisdom therapy and just go ahead and just get comfortable right where you're sitting and just go ahead and close your eyes. And we're just going to dive deep within. And so the first part that will get activated whenever we ask the unconscious these questions is that try hard part, that kid in the front of the class that's like, ooh, I got an answer. I got an answer. That's going to stick its hand in the air. And we don't want that part. We don't want that part that feels overly effortful. So while I love that part and it's helpful, if it comes up, you can just let that part know it's okay. It's okay. We'll come back to you later. We're just going to look for something a little bit deeper. And as we look for something a little bit deeper, what we're looking for is to find that inner critic. So you could think about a specific moment where that perfectionism really came up for you. A time when you created a work and maybe everyone around you was like, wow, it's amazing. And you were like, no, not good enough. And just think about that feeling in your body that gets activated in those moments. When that perfectionist, that inner critic is dismissing all of the praise, all of the work that you've put in and just saying, nope, nope, next one, next one. And as you take time again, there's no need to be in a hurry. There's no right or wrong answer. To just notice that feeling in your body. You can let that feeling start to give you an idea of what that inner critic looks like. Now, not everyone's the most visual in their imagination, so it doesn't need to be a perfect high-res 4K image. It could just be a general sense of the character or the concept that comes to mind, that comes out of this feeling. You heard that voice in your head, that perfectionist voice saying, keep going, not quite, not there, not yet. And then you turned and looked at them. What would they look like? They be human or animal, some kind of energy. What colors would they be wearing? What else would you notice about them? And whenever you've got a good sense, just describe it out loud, taking all the time you need.
Like brown soul. Pretty old. It doesn't look like me. Has a hump on its back and it's small. It's not tall. But its face is like pretty long.
Yeah.
With long fingers.
Not really a ideal archetype of perfection itself, is it, huh?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just ask it what its positive intent is. What is it trying to do for you? We know it means well, even if the effect isn't always great, but what is it trying to do for you?
That's that. It's taking care of me.
Hmm. How so?
Not letting me know the truth.
Hmm. What would happen? What does it worry would happen if you knew the truth?
I'm going to change.
Hmm. So it's afraid of change, is that right?
Yep.
Does it know the truth?
Yeah. And once I ask him for the truth, it shows me like this space, the universe. And like a lot of images, one behind the other.
How does that feel?
Breathtaking. Like adrenaline, but it feels good.
Yeah. How does that inner critic feel now that it's showed you the truth?
Disappointed.
Because it thought you were going to change more, or because it didn't want to?
It didn't want to show me this.
Yeah. So I want you to stay with that vast kaleidoscope of universal cosmic images, whatever's coming up. And as you flick through them, as they flick through you, just let yourself be drawn to your inner fan. Maybe thinking about a moment where you've listened to a track you just finished or were on stage performing and you felt incredible. When you really connected with, wow, this is amazing. This is coming out of me. This is beautiful. I love this. I'm so grateful I get to share this. Just let yourself be drawn to that moment where you can drop into your body and see how it feels. That celebrating voice, riding high, living large, really enjoying how cool this thing is, how amazing it is, how good it feels. And then again, as you find that feeling in your body, let it take shape. Get a sense of what your inner fan looks like. There's no rush. Just notice how they begin to appear, what their energy is like, how it's different from that critic, or what's similar. And then whenever you're ready, you can describe it out loud.
Yeah, it's a kid. It's me as a kid.
Hmm. What does that kid want to say to you?
To be relaxed and feel the energy.
Hmm.
And the energy, I don't know why, but it's green.
Yeah. Beautiful, growing, flowing, creative energy that you don't need to wring out of yourself. You can let flow through you, right? And so that kid has a positive mission. What is its positive mission?
To make me be here.
Mm.
Not in another place.
Mm. Wants you to be present. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that critic wanted to hide the truth from you and was afraid of you changing. And this kid wants you to relax and let this green energy flow through you. And just be present. Is that right?
Yes.
So just imagine a place that feels nice and neutral. This could be someplace you know, a park near your house, your apartment, anywhere at all. That you'd like to imagine just sitting down with this kid and this critic. So that the three of you can just kind of talk together. And what's that shows up right there?
We're drinking.
Interesting. Yeah. So how are the two of them relating to each other?
They don't look to each other. They look at me.
Okay. Can you ask them to look at each other for a moment, just to perceive each other? And then I want you to ask them one at a time what they perceive. What do they see in that other?
The critic one says fear, and the kid says selfishness.
Hmm. So when the critic looks at that kid, the critic feels fear or sees that that kid is fear?
Both. He says that the kid has fear and he's afraid to look at him.
Ah, okay. And what about that kid? Who's being selfish?
The critic one, but the kid is angry.
Hmm. So let's ask that critic, what is it afraid of with that kid?
Just like he fears to live life as it's supposed to be lived.
Hmm. So that critic has a lot of fear about living life the way that kid represents living it. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's just give some love to that critic, some sympathy, some understanding. That must be hard to carry that fear. Why is that kid so angry at that critic? Why does it see the critic as selfish?
He says that because he always wants to be the main character of everything.
Mm. He wants to be the star of the show.
Yeah. And every time he makes this, he's hurting ourselves.
Hmm. How so?
Because he's being rude to everyone. He's being selfish with everyone. And he's being a bad person with ourselves. Someone we don't want in our life.
So that critic is trying to keep you from the truth and protect you from change, but is really afraid of just living a more free and easy life. And so is constantly focused on itself, its glory, being the center of attention, and making that next perfect thing that's going to get you all the attention and keep away all of that fear forever. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I understand that that kid feels angry, and anger is generally a manifestation of the idea of things being unfair. How does the kid feel this is unfair?
Because he's not letting us live a life with courage, with mistakes, with happiness, with real love.
Yeah. Now, that kid and that critic are both part of you, right? These are inner aspects. So I'm curious, how does that kid actually benefit in some way, maybe even a way it doesn't want to admit, from what that critic does? And then we're going to ask that critic how it benefits in some way from that kid's energy.
The kid says that he's responsible and he works well.
Hmm. He gets things done. He really does help you create stuff, right?
The critic says that the kid helps to discover new things.
Right. So creativity is a process of having this kind of joyful, chaotic exploration, but then refining it, right? Not just slapping down the first idea and saying, okay, it's done, but digging for that raw material and then refining it and tweaking it and cutting away what doesn't fit or what's not good and finding better ways and improving and exploring, and they kind of work together in that sense.
Yes.
Yeah. If you ask them how they feel about this, these ways that they work together, how do they react? Do they look at each other? Do they say something? What do they do?
Yeah, they look at each other.
Differently than before?
Yes, with a little bit more acceptance.
Yeah. What would it be like for them to work together even more, to recognize that they're a team, for them to recognize that even though there's ways that they're annoying each other right now, that they need each other, and that if they can help each other, that might help you.
they both look at me and tell me to breathe.
Yeah.
To be paused. Maybe they can talk to each other a little bit more.
Okay, I want you to just breathe and let them talk to each other and then breathe as long as you'd like and just let me know when they have anything they want to share.
The kid says that he can work with the critic being if and learn from him in the way of responsibility, to make things, to make planifications.
Mm-hmm.
To start something and finishing it.
Yeah.
The critic says that he could learn from the kid that he could be more curious, making things happen.
Yeah.
Not controlling. The kid says that he likes not having control.
Mm-hmm.
So they agree in that part.
Yeah. Now, I think critics love to critique. That's their art, their passion. And it's really nice when those critiques are appreciated, right? We love the friend that we can say, hey, I have this idea. I need you to give me real feedback, right? Don't just tell me what I want to hear. Tell me what I don't want to hear and help me dig deeper, right? That's what we talked about earlier with some of the difference between New Age stuff and therapy. So what's a way that you could call upon your critic? So he's not there all the time giving critique when you don't want it, but you can call him and say, hey, I just finished this track. Tear it apart. Tell me what's wrong with it. Tell me how to make it better.
I liked, and the critic being likes it also, that to ask him something I don't want to hear of the creation, making it real.
Yeah. Wonderful. And I think fans like getting stuff, right? Like, you know, we join a fan club because we want more stuff. We want access to the artists. We want to see behind the scenes. We want more, more, more. So how can you feed your fan? How can you give that kid time to just be like, wow, this is fucking amazing?
Doing more stuff. I believe I turned off a lot of projects and activities and fell off the stage in these last 2 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling me to take those and make it happen again.
He wants more time to really enjoy those experiences.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank them both for being here and let them know if there's anything else that they want to share before we wrap up. They're welcome to do so. And then whenever you're ready, you can open your eyes and return to the room.
Yeah, they're really thankful, just as me.
Yeah. So we can think about this as kind of like diet and exercise, right? We want to have our exercise balance with our diet. If we exercise, 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 and never eat, we're going to fuck ourselves up. If we eat, and never exercise, it's not going to be good either. You know, with this idea of workaholism, I think what that kid I heard asking for was more opportunities to celebrate, more opportunities to feel good in just playful exploration, joyous creation, being on stage. But we want to balance that with not just the idea of doing more. So what I'm inviting you to do, and you can think about however it feels good to do this. It could be literally just doing a visualization exercise at times. It could be creating a whole ritual about it. But really think about how you want to call on that critic or feed that fan. And when you're feeling especially that workaholism coming on, check with yourself and go, wait, hold on. What needs to happen right now? Do I need to like go back to that track that I was working on last week and call on my critic and sit there and listen to it and be honest with myself that that chorus isn't working and I need to move that around and that synth sounds so stupid and like, you know, get that feedback in that moment, which is probably not the right moment to then try and create and fix all of those problems necessarily, but just to know that. And then also, when do I need to feed that fan? When am I kind of feeling low that critic's been really active, and that might be listening to music you made, you know, years ago, and just sitting there and just listening to it and be like, yeah, this is great. Like, just groove to it, you know? Or yeah, like play a fun concert and really be like, okay, before I go on stage, I want to bring that fan up with me. I want to feed that kid. I want to check in with him afterwards, you know, and let them know which one's kind of coming to get to, you know, you're the driver, right? You're driving the car, but who's going to sit in the passenger seat? It shouldn't be one all the time or the other all the time. They should trade.
Awesome. I love this.
Yeah. How does this feel for you?
Great. Great. I didn't know those guys, actually. I always thought in my inner child and my critic part of me, but not as two beings that are inside of me.
Yeah.
And they can talk to each other and they can talk to me. And I love this about the ritual of making the ritual and call them.
Yeah. Because I think what's important is that we often do some like exercise like this and then we're like, okay, cool. One part's good, one part's bad. But in some ways, that kid needs to grow up. That kid probably has a lot of dumb ideas that on second thought, I shouldn't make that album. That would be stupid. Or I can't do every single idea. Like I need to pick one and move forward with it more seriously, not just distract myself with 85 unfinished projects. And, you know, similarly, the critic, you know, sure has plenty of fear in those things, but it's very rare that someone gets over their fear by being yelled at. You know, like if we're in a relationship and we're feeling fear about it, someone just yelling, you need to be better in this relationship, doesn't make us go, ah, now I feel calm and full of love. Like, thank you. Thank you. That was great. Just what I needed to hear. What do you think it will be like as these two balance? If you imagine just 1 month from now, how will that feel differently? What will that slightly better shift look like for you?
I will be more calmed, and I believe there will be a synchronicity in myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything's falling in its place. Sometimes it could be, there could be mistakes, but I can easily go back and say, okay, that's okay. What can we learn of it? And let's move forward.
Yeah. And probably sometimes not so easily go back, you know. It's not always easy to go back and look at those mistakes. Sometimes those are the ones that we really don't want to admit or look at or confront. But going through that hard work is worth it. And it's better to, I think, deal with those mistakes and look at them honestly in the long run than to avoid them and pretend like everything's fine.
Yes.
Now, I have one final question. What was it like encountering that truth that critic had been hiding from you, that was so afraid of you seeing?
It was like overwhelming. I said breathtaking, but it was like overwhelming. I felt that there was something using all the space. There was a lot of colors. It was pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
It was like history, nature in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
People, faces, animals. And yeah, I felt like everything was filled of something.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you enjoyed our talk.
Thanks for having me, Devin. I had a great time. It was a pleasure. I love your podcast. I love what you do. I love the magic.
Thank you for being a part of this magic. Otherwise, it would just be me talking to myself. Well, I hope you found that conversation with La Calor as illuminating as I did. I know very well from personal experience how overbearing those inner critics can be. I know they want the best from us. I know they want to get that creative juice out. But man, oh man, can they make it difficult. But all is not lost. I know that sometimes I struggle to sit down and get a podcast out, but it's worth it. And I feel good after I do so. And I know that for a musician like La Calor, making a really cool song has quite the value in and of itself. So to close things today, let's go ahead and listen to the song Estanaki by La Calor.